Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire, Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on now at BelmontStakes.com.
Thank you.
Sirius XM Sports presents Marley. At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Hold on. Hold on. Here we go.
We're back. Hour three. About 5 minutes in, Andy Serling joining us from the New York Racing Association. And, of course, you heard that ad with Greg Wolf just there as the attention turns toward Belmont. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. It's not my fault that I'm chewing. I was chewing when you called me.
I
don't want to hear any crap from the listeners.
Well, there might wait a minute. It's early yet. There might be plenty of reasons in the next half hour for you, you know, for them to.
No, I had a pretzel. I just taken a pretzel. I buy those big bags of pretzel pieces at the farm, at the market down in Union Square. I like
the Dutch style, broken like the.
Yeah.
I love that. Do you like them when they're dark? When they're like a little overbaked?
It's fine. Yeah. I don't really need equal opportunity either.
I'll
eat anything.
Well, there's a terrific pretzel factory there's more than one in Lancaster, but a company called Hammond's Pretzels, and you can literally order them light, medium, or dark, salt, extra salt, no salt, chocolate cover, whatever you want. But anyway, they're one of the great Dutch, Pennsylvania Dutch pretzel makers, and we get. Like boxes of them. I love it. Big pretzel guy. Big pretzel. Well, now that I know this, I'm going to get some for you for summer.
Please don't.
You know who brings them up? Bill Gallo brings up a tin of them every summer.
Please also don't tell Bill to bring me any.
I was with your man.
Bill has other things to worry about than bringing pretzels up.
Well, speaking of...
When I was a kid, the Charlie Chips guy used to come.
Sure.
They say, I loved it. My mom bought the popsicles. That's what I was really interested in, the popsicles.
Tina...
Go ahead.
Well, Tina loves that too. Every so often, I'll go somewhere where they have the tins of Charles chips, and she used to get them off the truck too as a kid in Cambridge. And
I have a good friend who buys a lot of things off a truck, but that's another story.
Hey now,
you actually know, but anyway, never look at the suits he wears; you'll be able to figure out who it is.
Oh, that's like the scene in Diner with the guy selling the wardrobe out of the trunk of the car.
Oh, yeah. You know, I just watched that again.
It's the grill. Oh, so good. Well,
what could be more Baltimore than Diner?
Exact. And Tin Men and Avalon.
And Liberty Heights.
And Liberty Heights, exactly.
I won't be able to resist putting them in my mouth.
And then you will come under fire by the
exactly
by the listenership.
Go on. Yeah. No, I, yeah, my deserved fire, I assume, for that. How was Charm City?
Listen, I love it there, and Yeah, it's you know, to me, it's so maligned unfairly, and I don't get it. I just
great town. I love Baltimore. So much fun there with you.
Yeah, Jay too. Jay, you know, Jay was in town to pick up another award. It's the great Jay Privman trophy hunt.
When do you think we can sort of have enough with Jay in the awards?
I don't know. They may be pulling out for years to come. They may be pulling out.
I think Jay should start writing again. That's what I think. I'm going to tell him that he's got way too much free time.
Well, I tell you what, he turns up everywhere. He's been traveling. He and Ann have been traveling nonstop. It was good to have him.
Nice.
I'm sorry I couldn't go to the Alibi breakfast. It's one of the great frustrations, actually. The only one I've ever been to was when I had to go, when they gave me the old Hilltop Award.
You think Jay was upset? You think if on a scale like on a scale of 1 to 10, how upset, with 1 being the least, where do you think Jay's level of being upset was that you weren't there? Do you think it approached 1?
Yes.
Do you think it barely skirted 0? Where do you think it was?
I think it might have irked him a tiny bit, but he
understands. So.
You don't think, so?
I think he actually appreciated it. I think it was like a -3.
Well,
I think he probably, the speech, he probably thanked them for having it as a breakfast so you couldn't be there.
Well, he was nice enough to come up afterward, and I was able to congratulate him on air, which was nice. Your man, Joe Clancy was sitting there at the time, and he'll be.
You were at the breakfast with Jay.
Well, no, up with me on the air. I mean,
So he didn't go to the breakfast either?
He went to the breakfast, and he adjourned, maybe a little early to come up to do his segment.
Wow. What an honor that must have been for you.
It is. Listen, the Clancys, one of the most amazing additions, and it's funny because at the time, I didn't really, you know, I just thought it would be nice to have, you know, Joe and Sean and Tom Law, but we've created this rotation where the three of them visit, mostly on Thursdays, and they're all three unique perspectives on the game. I mean, obviously, Joe and Sean have a certain, you know, a certain lean when it comes to the chasing, and I love covering chase, so it's not, but they're so... the game is so ingrained with them, and Tom Law too, as a Saratoga resident and you know, former Thoroughbred Times writer, and they do a great service to the game.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and now their attention is turned pretty much. As soon as they get done with Belmont, they'll be turning the attention. Things are in full swing, Andy. I drove you. You were up a couple of weeks ago, right? You came to town.
No.
No?
No, I was in town about a month ago.
Oh, was it that long? All right.
Yeah, this is actually a long time where I'm not going to be up there. So I don't think I'm going to be up there until before the track opens.
All right.
About a week before the track opens.
Well, we have our annual pre-race meet lunch that
we've had once. So what is it? How frequently do you have to do something before you consider it annual?
Once.
When was the last time we had lunch before the meet started? Seriously, do you think it was before the pandemic?
It was after the pandemic.
Well, before the pandemic? No, I don't buy that shit. I don't buy that at all.
It was after the pandemic.
I don't buy that.
We had...
I'd like proof. Where?
It was at the local.
Oh, we did go to the local. We sat outside. That was last year. You're right.
Wow. Folks, mark down the date. It's May 23rd.
You're right. First time you've ever been right. You know what? I tried to forget it. It was such an experience. That's right. We sat out in the street. I remember. Did I spill my iced tea all over the place or something?
You know what?
Was that with you or with my mom? I definitely was sitting outside with either you or my mom, because I think we both sat in the same spot. The local's great. It's actually nice sitting outside because you're right in the street. It's nice. I like the local, and I like I love the stadium. My mom loves the stadium.
Then, of course, the great
my mom
Dave,
and I go to the stadium.
Dave Harmon, the great Dave Harmon.
Yeah. I think she had lunch there, dinner there with her friends the other day.
Well, our previous and our one of our other annual lunches, where in fact at least twice, Mrs. London's.
I'm aware of that.
All right.
I'm also trying to block that out. Do we have anything interesting to talk about? Because if not, I could make the 11:30 show of a movie I was thinking of seeing.
What did you want to see?
I forget what it's called. I was reading a review yesterday. It sounded good. I saw Blackberry yesterday, which I liked. What's the name of this movie? Vanquished? The Vanished? Not The Vanquished. Hang on. It got a good review in The Times.
Well,
and it's playing at Lincoln Plaza. Which is Lincoln Square, which is right near me, like a block closed.
Well, you were all
Sanctuary.
Sanctuary. Okay.
That's the review. Sounded good.
Well, looking forward
to it. I'm trying to move again, see if there's some good movies opening. There's a movie opening this week that looks good with, what's her name? Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Oh, I saw that. I saw a hint about that too. That she had, and the Oppenheimer.
I'll preview for Oppenheimer now. Yeah. I hope that's good. That looks great.
Yeah, exactly. I sent you that article.
We're opening the second week of the meet.
Let's go back to Baltimore for a minute and get your take on what are the key takeaways, Andy, from a very difficult and unusual, not unusual, but a very difficult day overall.
Well, I mean, as far as the race.
Yeah, start with the race.
I think it was not exactly the most exciting of frequencies going in. It was an exciting stretch duel. And, you know, the winner, like a lot of people, not named Andy Serling, thought would be in a controlling position was. And I think probably one of the reasons he won was the odd ride that the four got, who was actually the speed of the race. And for whatever reason, they not only chose not to beat the speed, but they chose to sort of ride shotgun for the winner, to be honest. Because when Irad wanted to go after the winner in the early stages, he's the one who herded him out a little bit. Not that Irad doesn't deserve to get hurt in a little bit, but nonetheless, and by keeping Blazing Sevens off of him, it enabled the pace to be very slow, and it sort of compromised Blazing Sevens' immediate ability to not only go after the winner, but also to save some a little more ground.
Right.
And as far as Mage, you know, one thing that nobody's mentioned is that Mage wrote absolutely fine.
Mm-hmm.
And if Javier had gone from the start, it's possible it would have been a different result. And it's very easy to sit in judgment and second guess that. The problem is if Javier had gone and it hadn't worked out, he'd be blasted for the rest of his career. And he rode a horse the way you were supposed to ride him, given the circumstances.
Right.
You know, I don't in any way blame him. I'm not saying a lot of people are blaming him at all. But I think that there's some notion, and it's not an unfair notion to say, should Javier have gone more early with Mage? But I don't think he's supposed to have, because he broke well and he settled into good business behind him. The little problem was that he had a target on his back, so people were sort of surrounding him a little bit, but he got him out in the clear. And I think that Mage was obviously compromised by the slow pace. But I think it's also fair to say he probably didn't run as well as in the Derby. But also it's probably fair to say that maybe I overestimated a little bit how much he benefited from the pace because he was so much better than all the other closers. But maybe they're just not that good. Capitrace just completely didn't show up. So I'm not sure that, you know, I'm not sure what to do with him. But that's a problem we'll have to worry about in a couple of weeks. Because I've never been his biggest fan, but that was, you know, too bad a performance.
To be believed, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, which is not to say that we shouldn't, you know, take into account, but I'm not sure, you know, I'm just not sure what to make of it at this point. So, National Treasure, listen, he had everything his own way. I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but the facts are facts. He had everything his own way in there, and he was able to get it done. Listen, I did not like Blazing Sevens. I didn't think he wanted the distance. I'm still not 100% sure he's really, you know, going to be an effective router in more competitive situations. But I do think he would have won the race. Let's say he drew post number three. He was inside the four. you know, and Ira could have been forward. I do think he would have won. And I don't think there's a big argument against that. But the winner got it done. I mean, obviously, because of the juxtaposition with the incredibly unfortunate incident earlier in the day in the Chick Lang, it does bring a lot of not surprising and maybe justified criticism, you know? And when, you know, you have a horse trained by Bob, and that's the whole situation that, listen, Bob Abbott's the face of racing, whether he likes it or not. And, you know, just like there are times that I don't want to be a major face of Naira, you know? I'd like to be out making a fool of myself drinking in Saratoga. I certainly did it for many years. But, you know, your life changes in certain situations, you know? I also got older, so making a fool. I also have plenty of opportunities to make a fool of myself on TV. So I don't need the same, you know, it's not like that. My making a fool of myself addiction is insated by my opportunities on television. But, you know, so when you're in that situation, you know, and I'm not, obviously, I'm sure he's as upset, if not more upset than that, as anyone about what happened. And I don't think that anyone should suggest he's not. But unfortunately, and it's just one of those unfortunate things, but because of that incident and then him winning the Preakness and all the stuff that surrounded him, it's a story that writes itself for a great deal of people in the mainstream, right?
Yeah.
And if you were them, you'd be writing the same story. And I don't think it's a question of trying to go after the game. It's the story of the day, right? And to ignore that and suggest it's unfair, well, life is unfair, you know? And when you get thrust in media attention, it's going to get more unfair. Everything gets exaggerated. So it was a bittersweet day in a lot of ways because of that. And I think to deny that is to be keep sticking your head in the sand. Is that fair?
No, it's accurate. And you know, the echoed the same kind of, you know, sentiments and essentially yesterday, Mig and Nick Luck and Steve Crist were all on, and I, you know, ostensibly.
Wow.
Yeah,
had well, that's an all star show.
Yeah,
and Jesus, now you're stuck with me.
I had Steve. You know, specifically, I went for Steve because I wanted to ask
him. Was it a show in the afternoon? An afternoon show yesterday? What?
that's an inside baseball.
He calls before noon now?
Yes, he did.
I got to find out about this.
I did say to him, he said, when I emailed him on Sunday night, he said, later is better. I said, yeah. I said, I know, Steve.
Like four in the afternoon?
You know, I wanted Steve's perspective as a publisher and as a journalist, and he said something very interesting, which was the scenario we're in now, this era of you know, sports writers that don't like the game, that you know, are choosing. Whether it's a reflection of policy being set by the editorial staff and the publishers, I mean that can be taken into account. But there is something to be said. I mean that we've got the same scenario in Louisville with somebody at the CJ that clearly doesn't like the game and wants to use it as a pinata. We have the same in New York, right?
That's going to make that person very popular in Kentucky. Well, you know, I don't think that's fair to say that about Joe, to be honest. I don't think Joe doesn't like the game, because Joe Drape has written a lot of very positive things about the game as well. The postcards in Saratoga are wholly positive. So I don't think it's fair to pin that on Joe.
Right.
I don't.
That's fine.
I know that Joe's going to write things that are going to piss off people. And he pisses me off in the industry. But that doesn't mean that he's wrong all the time. And I don't think it's fair to categorize him as somebody that doesn't like
it. And Steve's comments.
Maybe more about the New York Times, a sentiment of the Times, which may be more of an anti-gambling stance.
Which is fine as well. I mean, I whatever the policies. I mean, we've talked enough times. And if we turn it toward you know, Naira and you know, the past 15 to 20 years and the treatment by papers here, the Albany, in particular.
Yes.
I mean, you're talking about dishonest presentation, misrepresentation of facts, And
I would use misrepresentation more than dishonest.
That's fair.
But,
all right. But I'm just...
I'm not going to argue with that. I wholeheartedly disagree with an enormous amount of things that the Times Union has written over the years. And some I thought has been reckless and really irresponsible.
Yeah.
Throwing out innuendo as though it's fact, which is something they did last year. And I get it. I understand. Listen, I understand. On the other hand, you know, we ask for some of it as an industry. It's not as though we're, it's not like we're blameless, you know?
That's right. I don't mind saying that.
The industry, you know, has become much, much more aware and has been a lot better about it over the last decade. And continually trying to improve on things, but that doesn't mean that we're in any way immune from criticism and not deserving of it.
On that topic, your formative years were spent in Saratoga. It's a slightly different.
I thought I was still in my formative years. What are you telling me? You telling me it's over already for me?
As Gary Young says, it's definitely the other side of midnight for you, me, and others. When people ask you, I mean, when acquaintances, I mean, that know you're tied to your ties to the game, I mean, how do you respond, and how do you suggest people respond when confronted by questions, and especially because a lot of the lay crowd, they can only react to the information that's being presented to them by mainstream media.
Well, I mean, I think it depends on who the person is. And a lot of my friends know at least a bit about racing.
Right.
I think, my friend Chip is probably the best example of that. One of the things that Chip talks about, he lives in L.A., and he says that one of the unfortunate things, and he considers it, Chip's a big sports fan, and he's I don't think he met him. He went to Breeders Cup with me in LA actually once. He was with me one of the afternoons. But anyway, he says how, he and his friends used to go to Santa Anita fairly often. Maybe it was three, four times a meet or whatever it was. He said people just don't go anymore. And he feels bad about it, Anyway, he says, he's going to go out there. He lives in, was downtown now. He used to live in Pasadena, but he just said how people don't go the way they used to, and we talk about that. And he talks about how racing has, fallen whether it's issues with horse safety or whether it's just other entertainment situations, and people have sort of moved on, and I don't think he understands how much obviously simulcast things, but he's talking about people like himself that aren't really betters as much. It's just like to go and spend an afternoon, and Santa Anita has fallen a lot off there. And I'm not pointing a finger at Santa Anita. I'm sure this is something that's happened to all of us.
Sure.
I think one of the hopes with rebuilding Belmont is that it'll encourage people to make Belmont a destination again. I think it will to some extent. The question is how much, but one of the reasons is some of these places are seen, and somewhat rightfully so, as being antiquated. Belmont's certainly antiquated, and it's not up to the standards of that people have grown accustomed to for their entertainment options, right?
Yeah.
And so I think, with him, and I mean, he has a different appeal. I think more of his points would be, it doesn't matter what I think. It's the perceptions that you've created as an industry for the general public. And I think some of them are negative. I was reading somebody saying something on a message board yesterday, which I was thinking about, that, we're living in a more woke world. And I was thinking this was somebody who's probably more conservative. And I think that word woke scares the right so much. They don't even help if they knew what it meant. It's a good thing we live in a more woke world, because I think the whole concept of being woke is a very positive thing if they actually know what it means, and it's not a negative, it's a positive. But unfortunately, because of that, there are things about the game that deserve attention, right? And or get attention. I say deservedly get attention, not be redundant. But so it's hard, it's hard. I don't want to sit around and apologize for us. But I also think there's obviously some unfair notions out there as well. But that's not to say that, we can't always constantly be trying to do better. And I do think it's fair to say that while obviously injuries are part of the game, You know, you want to, your goal is zero deaths, right? That's your goal. Whether or not you feel that's an achievable thing is a completely different story. That doesn't mean you can't see it as a goal, even if it's completely unreasonable. And I think as an industry, we've done a lot to get closer and closer. And if you look at the numbers, they are much better. But the problem with the numbers is it doesn't mean they don't. If you have a horse fatality, you know, what is that? You know, under one for every, what is it, 1,000 starters?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean when you have them, they're going to happen, you know, 3/4 of every 1,000, you know, one every one, you know, 1,300 starters. Even if you get to that level, they're going to come in bunches, and then they won't come for a long period of time. It's the way it always is. It's numbers,
yeah,
right?
Clusters. Yep.
And unfortunately, because of what happened in Churchill on Derby Week, it happened at a very bad time, at least for the industry, because it brought a lot of attention to it at the time that we're getting the most attention to. That's just one of those things, but I think that we have to find ways to deal with it responsibly and not pretend that it's not an issue. It's hard.
Yeah, it is. It is. And when you think about the physical, you know, the physical numbers, that, you know, have been literally cut in half, in a short period of time. One thing on the messaging that drives me a little crazy, Andy, is how little organization and cohesion.
We're the most uncohesive industry in the history of industries. we all we do is, you know, I think we probably all feel that we're the one willing to work with the other ones, you know? So I think one of the things that frustrates me is any suggestion that these horses aren't being cared for.
Well, Steve said this yesterday too.
And that pisses me off. And part of the messaging is on us, but it's also in many cases an intentional slight. Because one thing's for sure, the horses are cared for by their people who dedicate their lives to it, you know, that spend endless hours, often for not a significant amount of pay, taking care of these horses. So it bothers me that perception gets out there, because that's wholly untrue.
Yep.
Things are going to happen, but to suggest that the caregivers are callous and have a disregard for the welfare of the horses is extremely unfair.
Yeah, and the people making these, you know, these
accusations. Well, I don't want to keep putting on the people making these things. I agree, but I think that we are the ones that need to take the responsibility for it, because getting the message out, and I'm not saying we're not trying to get it out, and I'm not saying that all the reporting is fair. But I think we need to get away from saying, well, it's happening because of him or her. You know what I mean?
No, I understand that.
We need the opposite. You know, one of the problems we've had as an industry is that we just, you know, we're reactive. We're not proactive. I think we're getting better at being proactive, but we're probably not there yet. I don't know what there is. But, you know, I mean, there's no question as an industry, in so many ways, we have been reactive for the majority of the time for a long, long time.
Yeah, agreed. And we've tried every time there's anything that constitutes a crisis, the reminder is made that while we've actually had significant advances in a lot of cases after any number of those crises, the reaction to the crises just never seemed to have.
That's fair.
And that I don't understand. I mean, I've talked about in symposium conference convention settings, I've talked to, you know, people in you know, fairly, you know, fairly well-positioned types that could make some of these things, could happen, you know, fix some of these issues. Every racetrack racing office has got a system of a text program that texts all the connections, not just trainers. I mean, owners can be on the text from the racing office. We've got these management lists, obviously, of texting. Why do we not have a crisis management texting system that sends out uniform messaging of how to react to, you know, to these situations? It would be the easiest thing. And if a certain percentage of respondents to media queries said the same exact kind of thing, it would present a unified voice.
But we're not a unified industry, Steve.
Well, then let's get unified.
Steve, we're not. We're not going to get unified.
This is an easy way. This is an easy way.
Okay, but you've got three very different companies running racetracks. And, you know, I'm fairly confident in our ability to get messages out. I'm not knocking the other ones, but I can't speak for them.
Right.
I have more confidence in one than the other one, personally. But I don't know, Steve. You know, it's hard to say. You know,
I get it.
I you know, it's hard to say. I don't know. It's out of my department. It's above my pay grade.
Well, I'm glad. I appreciate you. You know, being open and having, you know, the.
As opposed to my usual.
No, you have an important voice out there, and an enlightened one, and so hearing from you on it is valuable. A couple of other racing questions and results oriented. Let me ask about one horse, actually, New York based, that went down to Baltimore as well. This Maple Leaf Mel looks like the goods.
Yeah, she really does, doesn't she?
Yes.
I think she's just bossing these horses around the track. I'm sure that Bill Parcells, who owns her, must be excited. I mean, she's got to be considered one of the favorites for the test. I think they said they'd run the victory ride probably at Belmont.
Right.
They're prepped for the test. But, yeah, she looks very good. I agree. I mean, very good. Bill's never won a grade one. Not that surprising. Somebody said that, you know, they're tough to win grade ones. But I have to ask him, which is harder, winning a grade one or a Super Bowl? I guess a grade one for him. He found the Super Bowl is a lot easier.
I guess so, right?
He found when he coached. she is very good. I agree. I think she's terrific. We'll see. Yeah, she ran well, as did Rivet.
Yes,
I'm a Rivet fan.
How about the horse of Dan? We had Dan Blacker yesterday. The Straight No Chaser looks like he's on the come and is going to be a serious. He may have moved to the.
Yeah, I gotta look. Is he the one that got a big figure in his prior start?
Yes. Yes.
Right. Where was that, Maggie? That was Oakland.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember. It's funny. Maggie had asked me about that horse figure. She's friends with Dan and Christina, so she had texted me and asked me about his. Now I know where I remember his name from. That's right. Maggie had asked me about that horse last time he had run.
Yeah, this is a serious thing. I mean,
what number did he get now?
107.
Well, so what are they doing with him? I guess he's going to be in California.
Well, yes, but he wants a grade one. So, I mean, the Bing Crosby is the obvious middle term answer, I suppose. But he said he would consider, you know, the Saratoga grade ones as well.
Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, I tell you the truth, I really didn't pay that much attention to their races. Next to none is hard. I was on the air for a lot of it. And frankly, I just didn't feel like handicapping them. So I didn't. Hey, Tom was right. His horse finally ran okay.
Well, you know what? Right? And I'm looking forward to talking to Amos about
really?
Her.
Somebody looking forward to talking to Amos? Really?
Well,
I don't buy that. But.
Well, you know what? You know what's funny was this, and I know this makes you nuts, that the fairgrounds, she just wasn't the same horse in New Orleans this winter.
Well, let's not get carried away, Steve. She ran around an 80 buyer. Let's not get carried away. Because my friend Tom Amos said that she was the best filly horse he ever trained. And 2 years ago, he had Serengeti Empress, who was pretty damn good. So I'm very happy for Tom that she finally ran well for him. And I hope that it bodes for better things to come. But she still ain't no Serengeti Empress, with all due respect.
You've seen.
But Farragut Empress ran some clunkers in her day, but she also ran some, you know, I mean, Kentucky Oaks, and her test loss to Covfefe, who was an unusually good horse, and her win the Ballerina, which was remarkably good. I mean, these were very, very good races. And, you know, this filly's got a long way to go before, on the, you know, outside of the morning, she shows herself to be in the category of Farragut Empress. And I don't think Tom would disagree with that. Though he hates to ever agree with me. I talked to him the other day, actually.
What? Tell us about. I have not seen it, so I'm flying blind. That Paradise Creek win, Eyewitness. What's there?
I have no comment.
No,
I was running a pog, and I don't. Other than the fact that I didn't like the horse at all, that's how I have no comment. I don't know. It's hard to know what to make of that race. What do I make of that race? Honestly, and I think I've been on past my limit, so I'm going to go. But what do I think? I think it's amazing that in that race, that I found every single race we ran last week to be inscrutable. And that's my story. I'm sticking with it. But they managed to have the second choice beat the favorite by a nose and be well ahead of the others and took no money. I want to know how the betting public managed to get that race as right as they did.
Hmm.
Because it looked like an inscrutable race being run in a course, in a yielding course in the middle of a rainstorm. Yet somehow the public, whomever was betting that race, they had it exactly right.
They knew.
Not exactly, but that was to me the most incredible thing about it, to be honest with you.
All right. And with that.
I was just hailing you home for it, but you're not. You're running around the country delivering babies now.
I am.
Can you do the show from the delivery room?
In fact, the doctor is going to join me here at the end.
I think you should. I like that. It's a great idea.
I'm
gonna have the baby on.
the baby will be on sooner than later, maybe tomorrow.
I think it's very nice of them to have named that the child after you. I really do. I thought that was a really well deserved.
Well,
name it after Fridman.
they named the baby Marley. Interestingly,
after the dog in the movie with Owen Wilson, right?
Oh, I forgot about that. Marley and Me, is that right? Is that that movie that the terrible and ridiculous?
I'm assuming. I never saw it.
No, what's happened?
I have a lot of free time, but not that much.
Well,
free time.
What happened, act sort of inadvertently with the baby, the three babies. The first baby is Lennon, and with him,
Lennin, I assume.
No, no,
Stalin?
Not
going through all the dictators. Tell him to stop before Pol Pot.
Not Vladimir Ilyich, John Lennon. And then they named the boy, the middle boy now, Callum. And there's that Callum Scott, the singer. And now they've named the baby Marley. So there's musical tie-ins to all three children.
Tell him to not consider Bono.
I hope they're done. I think three is enough.
Steve, I'm going to give you some piece of news.
Yeah,
it's not really your call.
It's not my call. You're right. You're right. That's fair.
I'm going to go. It's been great though.
This was terrific. Thank you, Connor Murphy. Connor Murphy is going to join us.
All right.
Who won the Louisville?
All the best to him. See you later.
Is there a noon movie for you? There he goes. Oh, my God. He's the best. Let's get to Connor Murphy, because foreign relations, I wasn't going to miss a chance to congratulate Connor and congratulate those of you that got 1680. Decky Cannon aboard and heads up ride on foreign relations that who's now actually won two in a row and three of his last four, breaking his maiden at Turfway. So let's get Connor in here to roll out the last segment of the morning. And I can't remember the last time we talked to Connor, but this is pretty cool. This is another Caracanti. And the Caracantis, tell you what, value sire, right? Connor Murphy, congratulations.
Thank you very much, Steve.
This is a nice win. You and Decky Cannon got a great ride, and you dominated.
Yeah, he did it well. I mean, you know, obviously he was stepping up in class, so it was nice to see that he belonged with those horses and won well, you know.
In a big way. And this is a horse, I mean, I mentioned as I was reaching for you that, you know, going back to February, near the end of the Turfway meet was winding down, breaks his maiden, and this is an interesting story. He's a five-year-old gelding, and he missed a chunk of time. You know, let's talk about his backstory and coming your way.
Yeah, well, he only came to me, actually, middle of last August, and you know, we got him going. Obviously, he'd run once as a three-year-old and had a setback after that. So, yeah, he came to me last August, and we got him going with a view to getting ready for Turfway. And, you know, it was quite clear from early on in his work that he was going to be a middle-distance horse, which, you know, a mile and a quarter, eventually a mile and a half, all going well. So, you know, we had to run him a little shorter than would suit him the first couple of times, but he ran well in both those races. But you could see as soon as he stepped up in distance that he was a lot more in his comfort zone, and he was seen to best effect, you know.
It seems. I mean, you ran him early on at a mile and a 16th, and he, you know, you ran kind of evenly, but then when you got a chance to go a mile and a quarter at Turfway, how many of those are in the book, or did you have to ask Tyler to write that race?
No, in fairness, that's the good thing with Turfway. They do try and write a few of those mile and a quarter races. There was actually a maiden the very first day of the meet, but we just weren't quite ready for that. So we had to, you know, like you say, we had to run him a little shorter than he preferred the first couple of times, but he ran very well. And then the next time the mile and a quarter came around, he won well. And we ran him back in an allowance at Turfway going a mile and a quarter and fancied him strongly, to be honest. But, there was a couple of things happened through the race that just didn't go to plan, put it that way. And that's probably on paper his only disappointing race, but we knew that wasn't his true running that night. And glad, you know, obviously he went on to Keeneland, and what happened there was unfortunate, but, you know, it was just one of those things that can sometimes happen, unfortunately. So, and yeah, we went down to the Louisville Din, and he stepped up and ran a big race Saturday.
Yeah, you know, you're mentioning the heel clipping incident at Keeneland that, you know, cost him the win.
Yeah.
That was tough.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's, even though he's a 5 year old, he's still maturing, and you know, it wasn't anybody's fault. The horse just jinked from he shied away from the grandstand and jinked in towards the rail, and unfortunately, you know, caught a horse. And, you know, we were disqualified, which, you know, we couldn't have any, you know, arguments about that on the day. But, yeah, it meant we kept our condition for Churchill, and he was into running an allowance in Churchill last week. And the only reason we took him out is because he drew the 12 hole, and, you know, the mile and 3/8 start at Churchill comes up quite quick if you're drawn wide. So we just said I spoke with Dick, the owners, I spoke with them, and, you know, luckily thankfully they were happy to give him a shot in the Louisville, and yeah, very happy.
Absolutely. And, you know, when it comes to graded stake wins, you know, you and Deck, think back to Dimension. We'll talk about, you know, some history in a minute. I do want to ask you one interesting thing. When you mention about the grandstand, this is not the first time I've heard and recall stories of the way the racetrack is positioned and the way the building is positioned being a little unusual, and horses sometimes being startled by the presence of the grandstand. And you're not the first person that has had a horse do that, essentially.
Yeah, well, the thing with this horse, Steve, he's, you know, I believe His sire Caracanti was, I believe he was fairly quirky as well, if memory serves me right. But this horse is just, you know, he's still developing mentally, even though, like you say, he's five. But he's, you know, that day it was just pure, you know, look, there's nothing a rider can do when a horse chinks in like that so quick. There's nothing any rider can do about it. So it was, and Keeneland obviously does all, you know, it's a popular place and there's usually a big crowd. So he'd never seen anything like it before. So, that's just the way it transpired on the day, unfortunately.
The connection-wise, tell me about Double O Racing.
So Double O Racing is Declan Orpin and his wife Cassandra. They're, you know, they've had a lot of horses in training around with different trainers the past few years, and this is the first horse they've had for them. So thankfully, we've had a good start, and fingers crossed this horse can keep moving the right direction. You know,
well, this is a bargain to say the least. This was a horse that was that came out of OBS April, you know, going back 3 years, and was a $25,000 purchase. So clearly, you know, they've been patient, right? I mean,
and you have to give them credit for that. They've been very patient, because even when I got him last year, he was a very raw horse, and he's, you know, even through turf in the winter, he was still far from the finished article. And it's only since the spring has come in here that he's really filled out his frame, and he's really a strong strapping horse now. And I think, you know, I think physically he's there, mentally he still has a little ways to go, but he's definitely getting there, you know. So I think when he's, you know, that was only, I think I said that was only his seventh run, and he's finally dropping with him now, and he knows what he's supposed to do, and that's why we're seeing the best of him, you know.
Well, it's exciting to have this, you know, come together that way, and you know, knowing that he can make this trip, obviously, you know, he becomes a you know, Breeders' Cup turf type down the road, and in fact, at Santa Anita, that's where his sire won his Breeders' Cup mile. So
that's right. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. Fingers crossed. I mean, I think you know, that will be, if we're not thinking that far ahead just yet. But you know, you obviously have to dream in this game too. And he's definitely, if he keeps improving, and you know, who knows where he could take us, you know.
Well, and that's, you know, that's what it's about. I mentioned for you, you know, a fourth graded stake win. You've been training, what, 8-9 years domestically, and Dimension, the horse that we talked about, Dimension more than once, was a multiple graded stake winner.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was a brilliant horse. I think he was our first horse in our first year, and he was, you know, did very well in Woodbine. He won graded, I think he won three graded stakes in Woodbine, and he won a stake in Kentucky Downs, which the turf sprint back then wasn't graded, but he won there, and he won a listed stake in the fairgrounds as well, and, you know, ran in a couple of Breeders' Cups, finished fifth in one of them, and yeah, he was a hell of a horse who stayed very sound for a very long time. I mean, he won his last stake just before he turned 10, so he was a superstar for us. Even though he didn't win a grade one for a small stable like us, he was a superstar. So you know, we're trying to find another one like him, and you know, we'd love to hopefully find a horse who could win a grade one sometime. That's the goal, and you never know, foreign relations might be the one.
Might be the one. And in regards to obviously being in nice form right now, talk a little bit about spending the winter at Turfway, Connor. Connor Murphy joining us off of the Louisville win on Saturday at Churchill with Decky Cannon, and mile and a half. I'm just, you know, you look at that string of starts, four starts on the synthetic, and, you know, feels like you know, this horse has gotten onto a nice roll. Talk about being at Turfway at the winter and how it helped you.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing with Turfway now, I mean, I've got 5-year-old twins who actually turn 6 tomorrow. So, you know, staying here in Kentucky for the winter is important for someone like me. I mean, we've gone to the fairgrounds a couple of years and stuff like that and had good success. But, you know, when you've got a young family, it's nice to be able to stay in Kentucky year round. And the beauty of Turfway now is the horses are fantastic and the track is fantastic. And obviously the whole facility is improving all the time. So it's a huge advantage. I wouldn't say advantage, but it's a huge help to horsemen to have a place like that in the winter. So you can stay here year round. So
that's nice. How many head are you handling?
Got 15 at the moment, and you know, we're obviously in the training center just outside Louisville, and we've a synthetic track here, and you know, it's a great advantage. It's a nice environment, so you know, I love it here, and probably I wouldn't be training if I wasn't able to train here. So it's always nice to have, when you've a small number, it's always nice to have a few exciting horses in training with you. So yeah, fingers crossed it all keeps going the right direction.
Well, no one's going to question your ability to, you know, to make one into a good horse if the foundation is there. And this is exciting that, you know, to see you have this kind of success. There's one horse that I got to ask about. What's happened to Dark Shift?
Dark Shift is he's probably, along with Foreign Relations, he's a very exciting horse, and you know, he ran a big race in California back in February, and just, you know, from the outside post, Frankie Dettori just, you know, he got him up, you know, he felt he had to send him, which was just from the outside post, and he ran a big race. Unfortunately picked up a little quarter crack after that, which, you know, nothing major, but just has just set us back a little bit. But he's back in training now, and he's doing very well, and fingers crossed it shouldn't be too long more before he's back in full work, and definitely looking forward to getting him out the second half of the year. But he's very, very exciting horse, yeah. He's, again, you know, if we can get him back, he's back doing very well, and that quarter crack is healed up 100%. So, yeah, we're looking forward to a big second half of the season with him all being well.
Nice, because that was that crazy Thunder Road group that I think there were 5 or 6 within a length of each other at the wire.
That's right, yeah. And I think, you know, first run of the year, and then ran a bit fresh our horse, but he's, I think once he's held up and covered up, he's got serious talent, this horse. So yeah, we're
nice,
very excited about him.
Is he 4 or 5?
He's a 5-year-old, yeah, but he's lightly raced. He's only run 14 times. You know, it's a good thing Charlie Hills, obviously, who had him in England, they took, he won first time out as a 2-year-old, and I think he ran one more time after that, and they just kind of looked after him until he's 3-year-old year. And he's been well looked after in his early days. So that's the, hopefully we can reap the rewards there. And he's 5, but again, lightly raced. So, you know, hopefully there's plenty of miles left in him.
Well, not so bad for the Connor Murphy barn. 15 head and 2 stakes horses in the barn. So pretty good percentage.
Yeah, yeah, fingers crossed. Hopefully, you know yourself, Steve, it's all about having the horses good enough. And I mean, it's, it definitely makes it a bit easier getting up in the morning when you've got those types of horses to look, going and train, you know.
Exactly right. Well, Connor, delighted for you and thrilled. I wasn't going to let the week get away without getting a call in and getting you out in front of everybody again. The Louisville Grade 3 with Foreign Relations for 00 Racing, and well done.
Thank you very much, Steve.
I appreciate it. Connor Murphy, everybody. There it is. And he does a good job. And you know, sends out maybe 60, 70, 80 starts a year and wins. He's got that accent. You know my theory. You can always improve the quality of a show with a foreign accent. We'll get as many brogues in and as possible. Thanks to Connor and to Chris Sobosinski. Opening day at Delaware. It's opening day at Fort Erie today, too. Thanks to Jessica Martini. They're sending him through the ring right now at Timonium. John White as well today, and Andy. Good luck if you're playing today. Back with the Wednesday get-together. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale. Tomorrow, Dick Powell. And we'll have Tom Hoot to talk about the new and exciting, right? You excited?
The National Thoroughbred League.
Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks.
On Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders